Welcome to God, Sex, and You, a daily discipleship podcast on healthy sexuality. Here's your host, Purity Pastor Dustin Daniels.
In Exodus chapter 20, verse 3, Moses tells us that you must not have any other gods but me. And Jesus said in Matthew 6, 24, no one can serve two masters, for you're going to hate one and you're going to love the other. You're going to be devoted to one and you're going to despise the other. You cannot serve God and be enslaved to money. Well, Jesus is speaking about money there, but his point is that anything that replaces him will be a miserable experience. Man, isn't that the truth? I mean, as someone who served at the altar of sexuality for over 20 years of my own life, I learned firsthand how slavery works. And that's our topic for today as we continue our series on how to raise your boys and turn them into godly men. Dr. Mike Fabares is my guest, and we're discussing his latest book, Raising Men and Not Boys, Shepherding Your Sons to Be Men of God. In today's podcast, we'll discuss several things. Number one, explaining. How do we explain the redefinition of marriage? Number two, why our kids are getting married later in life. And number three, does waiting for marriage, does saving yourself for marriage, does being a virgin mean perfect rock star sex when you finally get married? Today's show is titled, Why Sex Makes a Lousy God. When you talked about the proper context for sexuality there, you mentioned marriage several times and marriage and sexuality, two sides of the same coin from God's perspective. How do we go about explaining what marriage is since it's been redefined in our culture?
I can't please my culture when I really talk about anything. I mean, if the Bible says, for instance, I'm to give to the Lord, give to my church as a gift of God, it's a give off the top. The world doesn't understand that. My non-Christian mother-in-law doesn't understand that. You mean you gave that much money to the church last year? What? You're a fool. Mm-hmm. You could have provided for my daughter this, that. I mean, they don't get our standards, right? But one day we understand, as the Bible says repeatedly, there's one lawgiver and one judge. I'm going to answer to the God of the universe for my life. And he says things like this: when I make an income, I'm to give to the Lord. He says, hey, this passion that you have for sexual contact and sexual pleasure, I mean, that has to happen within the context of marriage. And if you don't like the wife that you got married to, well, I guess you're going to have a lot of disappointment in that regard. Or, you know, there's a lot of issues in life where we're going to have to say, here is the context. The world doesn't understand it. And the context is clear. One man, one woman for life. And that is the picture. And God has said, here it is. And because he gets to make the rules, and as one of the old time preachers said, if you get your own universe, you can make your rules. But this is God's universe that we live in. So yes. He makes the rules. Mm-hmm. And this is what he said. So I'm looking in my kids' life to develop that kind of respect for the rule maker who says, you know, the context for you is to wisely go about choosing the right kind of spouse and then getting married. And I think for us, and we haven't brought up this topic yet, but I got two boys that are leading toward marriage and they're young. And a lot of the Christian community looks at me going, well, you're going to let them get married even before they finish college? And I'm thinking, yeah, but I bet you want them to be sexually pure through college, don't you? You know, there's just so many things that I think we have to say, if this is what we want, the wisdom of God to put that sexual desire in its proper marital context, then I'm not going to tell my kids like so many other parents do, hey, you know what, you got to get through college, you got to have a nest egg, you got to buy a house, you got to be financially stable. Listen, my kids, they got jobs, they're working, they're going to school. You know, as God brings that wise mate into their life, I'm not going to say, hey, wait 7 years. And you're not going to be able to have a sexual relationship with this person in the context of marriage until you're, you know, 29 years old. I think that's the foolishness when the world is defining for us when we should have our kids get married while they're busy having sex from the time they're 15. And we're trying to train our kids to be pure. They're 21. They haven't had sex. They've wanted to all their adolescent years. And we're saying, oh, wait another 9 years, and then you can kind of keep up with the Joneses and the standard of our society. So there's so many things about, just defining that proper context for sexuality and then not putting it out as a carrot so far down the road because the society tells us to do that. So in that regard, I'm for younger marriages. As long as we're training good, wise, young disciples in our homes that know that marriage is a covenant for life. I tell my kids, I have no problem with you getting married young. You got to be able to cut the apron strings. You got to be able to stand on your own. You may be eating top ramen, living in a one-bedroom apartment, but you know what? Those will be good years, training years for you. But once you get in it, you're not getting out of it. This is God's plan for you. And God only has a couple, you know, extreme situations for the dissolving of that covenant relationship. So set it up as a good thing. Talk positively about it. Don't hold it out there as something they're never going to be able to touch until they're, you know, halfway through their life, and give them a sense that God is going to bless these sexual urges. I've said to my kids so often, listen, you're not going to be involved in pornography on your phones. You're not going to be able to go here. We set parameters for all that. Maybe we'll get to talking about that. But you know what? When you get married, you and your wife can have all the sex you want, you know, just go, have at it. God will bless it. Just like in the Song of Solomon, when you have that one comment that I think must be from God, who sees that sexual relationship there in the middle of the Song of Solomon. And he says, yeah, eat, drink, eat your fill, be intoxicated. He says, great, go for it. And I'm telling my kids, go for it. I know you want to have sex right now, but you're going to have to wait. But when you get there, I want you and your wife to have all the sex you want to have. Just knock yourself out. And to speak positively like that about sex in the context of marriage, I think a lot of Christian parents have rarely even brought that up, let alone said anything close to that to their kids to give them any hope that there is going to be a place for sex in its proper context.
Mike, I talked to a woman several weeks ago, and she put a new perspective on something that I've never considered. She said, you know what? I waited until I was married to have sex, and the church basically told me all the things that how great our sex life was going to be because I waited. And she said, Dustin, it's I got to tell you, I'm frustrated. I'm disappointed because we don't have this great sex life that I pictured that we were going to have. And right. I just found that so interesting that she picked up on, whether it was subconsciously or not, that just because we follow God's design doesn't mean that there's going to be a lot of effort into getting to know someone physically.
If our culture is worshiping at the altar of sex, it's their God, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. This is their golden calf. Then they're going to present it to us always in our society as the end all, the ultimate. Every movie, they're going to work so hard in those sex scenes. They're going to make sex look so perfect and so fulfilling. And so every single song, you know, that these pop stars sing, oh, it's going to be so awesome. It's great. Well, of course, they have, you know, all these failed marriages, their sex lives are awful. And so we need to realize they're selling us a bill of goods. And when I tell my kids, hey, listen, knock yourself out when you have sex. Well, I got one that's about to get married this next summer. And in premarital counseling, as I do with all the couples I take through premarital counseling, when we deal with the week where we talk about sex and marriage, one of the first things we talk about is, hey, I know you're finally at the finish line for having full freedom in your sex life with your spouse. But let me just warn you, sex makes a lousy God. It's not a God mm-hmm. that you're going to want to worship at. Matter of fact, it's going to be awkward. It's going to be weird. It's not going to be as fulfilling as you think. You think you'll never have an appetite for pornography again. Think again. It's going to happen. This is not what you want. You're going to get into this and you're going to find out, like every other illusion on this planet, whether it's owning a home, whether it's having children, whether it's being able to have sex any time of the day or night on your honeymoon, it's not what it's cracked up to be, because the world has rejected the one true and living God. As Jeremiah said, God said through Jeremiah, you've dug these cisterns and you thought you'd have life in them, but they're empty. They're broken cisterns. They don't hold any water because you've rejected me. I'm the well of the living water. I'm the source and the fountain of living water. So as C.S. Lewis said, when we find desires in us after experience like Solomon and Ecclesiastes, and we realize nothing in this world can satisfy that the way that we hope that it would, then we must be made for another world. And we are. God has got another world for us. And all of our desires, whether it's food, whether it's, you know, personal, you know, affection and love and acceptance, whether it's fulfillment in our work, whether it's relationships or church or whatever it is, those things are going to be perfectly fulfilled. For now, they're broken. We live in a broken world. Our sex lives are going to be broken in marriage. It's never going to be all it's cracked up to be. But I am here to tell my kids, listen, there's a context for it. But when you get there, right before you step into it, I'm always going to remind you, as I do every congregant I ever, you know, officiate their wedding, it's not what you think it's going to be. It's not going to be like Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie on a scene where if you were there watching it, you'd realize it was the most awkward thing. It was embarrassing. It took 15 takes. Elbows hit people's chins and knees, you know, hit people's kneecaps. And it was just, you know, it's not what it's cracked up to be. So get your perspective where it needs to be. Know the only thing that's going to satisfy our deepest desires. And even for now, it doesn't fully do it either with God, but it's a long distance relationship with God. One day he's going to draw so near that his son is going to touch his feet on the Mount of Olives. And we're going to have a real connection with God that's not long distance. But right now, that's the desire that you should be shooting for. As Colossians 3 says, set your mind on things above and everything else here. It's good. I love sitting in my house and at the end of a day, you know, walking in and smelling a pot roast or, you know, a great dinner my wife has cooked. Those are good things.
Sure. But
they make lousy gods. And so does sex makes a lousy god. So don't enshrine sex as a god.
The Apostle Paul writes, "For am I now seeking approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ." The Apostle James writes in James chapter 4, verse 4, "You adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God." Do you find yourself trying to please the world? Are you trying to find some type of medium between culture, you know, what culture teaches about sex and what God teaches about sex? Well, the Apostle John writes in 1 John chapter 2, verse 15, he says, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, well, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that's in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life, that is not from the Father, but it's from the world. And the world, well, it's passing away, along with all those desires. But whoever does the will of God, he abides forever." Yes, indeed, sex makes a lousy god. Well, tomorrow we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Mike Fabares. We're looking at his book, his brand new book, Raising Men, Not Boys, Shepherding Your Sons to Be Men of God. And we're going to be discussing the importance of modesty, among several other things. Well, as we move closer and closer to the end of the year, I just want to mention, if God nudges you to make a year-end donation to a ministry, please consider God, Sex, and You. It is a tax-deductible gift, and we are reaching 80 countries around the world with this podcast. We would love to reach the other 80 plus, and we could really use your help to do so. You can become a Purity Partner with us starting at $1 per day. You can do so by visiting dustindaniels.org/give. And while you're on the website there, if you're looking for some reading materials, click on the store. There's some excellent resources for you. Thank you so much for listening to God, Sex, and You. You can follow me on Twitter at Purity Pastor. Also on Facebook there, Purity Pastor. Email me your questions. I would love to hear from you. Once again, at the website, dustindaniels.org. Blessed are the pure in heart. That's what Jesus says. Blessed. You're a blessed man. You're a blessed woman if you are pure in heart, meaning if you don't mix anything into your walk with Him. Why? Why are you blessed? Well, because you're going to see God. Oh, what a glorious day that's going to be. Walk worthy today, my friend, as you cling to Jesus. I love you, and I look forward to our time again tomorrow.